Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with my friend Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David, how you doing?
Good. By the faithful and for the faithful.
We're still here. Another night, another loss. Another record.
It's the dirty dozen, 12 out of 13 years outside the playoffs.
Another regulation loss.
The Oilers just don't have it. They're not even close to having it. They've won one game in their last 10.
11.
They've 11. I was just looking at the last 10 games thing from the NHL, but
One, eight,
one in the
two,
last
two.
11. And they just don't show any real signs of life.
Remember when the Oilers were ahead of St. Louis and there were other teams that were clambering them? Well, when St. Louis has won nine in a row, so they're long gone. And that's what you got to do to get out of the pack. And the Oilers just show no signs of winning two in a row, let alone nine.
Wouldn't that have been a nice thing if the Oilers had done that, Bruce?
Yeah,
That's
it
all I
would have
could do
been.
is kind of sit here and. All right, so the Oilers lost to the Islanders tonight. What was it, 5-2?
5-2.
5-2, lots of empty net, or an empty net goal. 5-2, and this is our two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast. Bruce, what's your good thing?
My good thing is the Oilers actually hanging around and making a game out of this when things were kind of going against them. They were down once the Islanders made it 2-0, and I'm thinking it's their third and four nights, back-to-back nights, travel in between. That's kind of guaranteed loss night, or so goes the common wisdom. And once they fell behind 2-0 right in the second, I thought, well, they'll be lucky to get a goal and they'll probably lose 4-5-1 kind of thing. And they got one very late in the second. Unfortunately, they gave up a second 2-goal lead early in the third. And again, I thought the same thing. That's it. They're out of this game. And yet they cut the margin to 3-2, and then they came very close. There was a goal line play involving Connor McDavid that could easily have been jammed home to tie the game and wasn't. And only when the Oilers took desperate risks in the very late going and got burned. And as soon as New York broke out over the blue line 2-on-1 after the Oilers had basically controlled play for many minutes, I said to my son, who was watching at the time, "Oh, this is it. It's over now." And they hadn't even got to center yet, and I knew they were going to score.
Yeah, not the best play. Klefbom's trying to pressure, and they need to get a goal, so I get it. He's trying real hard there, and he just didn't make the play. That's going to happen when you're really pressing hard like that. I'm just checking. Oh, it's Ontario and Bakersfield 1-1, Bruce. I'm to get my sports highs. I'm now doomed to look at the AHL.com and just follow the Bakersfield Condors. What are they at now? Is this their, would they be
14
14 if
straight,
they
14 straight, going for 15 tonight. Something which
Wow.
has only been accomplished six times in AHL history, which is a very long history.
The interesting thing is Shane Stardust played most of those games and he's played very well, but you never. It's funny that you just never hear, like, no one's saying, oh yeah, he's going to be the backup goalie in Edmonton next year. He's the guy. You'd think you might hear that. I guess he's probably going to have to win in the playoffs to make believers out of everybody. He's not playing tonight, of course. It's Skinner tonight. And they are ticking down. The game is
Looks like it's going to
going to
overtime, doesn't
overtime.
it?
All right, so my good thing and my bad thing are kind of the same. It's the bad thing is just how badly the whole heavy hockey thing went with the Edmonton Oilers. This was Shirelli's modus, his big thing. And lots of fans wanted to see a tougher, heavier team. They were tired, sick and tired, and you and I were in this number, sick and tired of seeing the Oilers pushed around and beat up. And the Sam Gagner trade brings home those memories of Zach Cassian clobbering Sam Gagner. So there was certainly a huge desire in Edmonton by the vast, vast majority of fans to see a tougher team, and especially with Connor McDavid coming to town. But, you know, I've heard some people say on Oilers Now that there wasn't a lot of opposition to the Lucic signing at the time. There was actually quite a bit of opposition. And including from Craig Simpson, you know, an unlikely source who spoke at that time about how worried he was after about 3 years into this deal, it going sideways. And, you know, I was hopeful it would work out for about 4 or 5 years. I was not at all thinking it was going to work out in the long term, but I was hoping it would work out for about 4 or 5 years. Anyway, it hasn't worked out. Barely worked out the first year. And I just think this Hitchcock thing with the Oilers bringing in Ken Hitchcock to run the team is an exclamation mark on how the Chiarelli philosophy and era of hockey doesn't work anymore. And Hitchcock being a heavy hockey coach himself. And tonight, case in point, who's out on the second line with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? Milan Lucic. And, you know, this is just – and Chiasson. This is never going to work. This is a bad idea. And so the – to me, like, the lack – of production that line gets, they just can't do much out there. They can't play. They can't compete. And for him to keep going with that, it's the heavy hockey approach. It's just been, I think it's like for most fans at least, thoroughly repudiated that approach. And the fact that Hitchcock keeps going with it is baffling, but the fact that he's losing with it isn't baffling at all. I mean, who do we have on the third pairing tonight? Petrovic and Gravel, two big guys, but man, they can't make a pass between them. And I don't know. I just, the Oilers have got to go in a new direction. And this is the exclamation point on this season. I mean, if the heavy hockey era wasn't dead, no fan's going to put up with it. So I just think having Hitchcock run this team in the same way, same philosophy is the good and the bad, because it's going to make us once and for all sick of it. Thoughts?
Well, more bad than good.
It's good that we don't. I just think I don't know what they're going to do with Lucic, Bruce. Like, this is the thing. It seems like every coach, McClellan and then now Hitchcock, they got to keep playing this guy too high up the order. Like, when are we going to get a coach who just says enough, puts him on the fourth line for good, where he might actually be okay-ish?
Well, that's kind of where he played tonight, wasn't it? I mean, he played 12 minutes.
He was with Nugent-Hopkins, Bruce.
I guess I saw him with Brodziak and Cassian later.
Yeah.
And thought they're going back to square one with those guys. But
oh, yeah. Whatever. Kyle Brodziak, yeah. Now, Zach Cassian. You know, I think it's okay to have he's playing fine.
Well, you got to have some. I mean, my big complaint about the Oilers for years was that all of their big guys couldn't play at all. They either had small skilled guys or big heavy guys that couldn't skate or pass, you know, and there was nothing in between. And you got to have some guys on your team who are both, you know, that can cruise around and, you know, take no prisoners, but also make a play once in a while. And Cassian is at least doing that lately. And I'm not the biggest fan of this player in general terms, but credit where due, he's been playing some decent hockey this last while. But they've got just not enough of it translating into offense or defense.
Yeah, they've got one defenseman who's adept at moving the puck. That's it. And he's not even on their top power play. I mean, Darnell Nurse does an okay job on that power play, and he's okay moving the puck too, I guess. So, anyway, it just seems like we're just going over the same old terrible.
Yeah, it does.
What's your bad thing?
My bad thing. I'm gonna crap on the officials tonight, and I've been trying to not do that very much. The older I get, the more resigned I get to the fact that it's never going to be very consistent. And, you know, if you're a biased fan of one team, you're never going to be happy with it. But there was one sequence tonight where Darnell Nurse really got the short end of the stick in multiple ways from Anders Lee of New York Islanders, who he had an extended and fairly vicious exchange with. And then the way it was officiated during and then after the incident. It started with Darnell cross-checking Lee. Just sort of routine, you know, the lacrosse-style cross-checks that you see. You know, just trying to nudge him out of the scoring area. And then Lee turned and he gave him a two-hander, and Darnell gave Lee a two-hander. And then Lee came up and just clubbed Nurse in the face with his stick. Bang! Just basically probably the worst high stick I've seen this season, or very close to it. And then Nurse just drops to his knees, stunned from the severity of the blow. And then being Nurse, he jumps back up to his feet, challenges Lee. They both drop the gloves. They go at it. And it was, you know, Lee was holding his own in the fight. And then the linesmen decide, while they're still going at it, well, now we're going to get involved. And one of them comes in and he grabs Nurse from behind. The other guy is out of position. He's reaching over, trying to get at Lee. And meanwhile, Lee is just going boom, 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 while the one linesman's holding Nurse down. So then they finally separate him. And then when they do, Darnell turns to the linesman and he just rips him. The F-bombs were flying, like he really tore a strip off the guy. But he was understandably incensed. He'd been smashed in the face, mad enough to start a fight. Then he'd been restrained during the fight while the guy that had smashed him in the face punched him a few times because the linesman didn't get it right. So he ripped the linesman. So what do they do at the end? Then the referees, standing back watching all this, somehow decide that the penalties are even for 2 minutes for Nurse for slashing, 2 minutes for Lee for high sticking when he friggin' clubbed him in the face. It was just brutal.
Suspendable, Bruce?
Maybe. Maybe. It'll be one of those. Anytime somebody does get suspended in a game against the Oilers, it's always one of those where they go, well, kind of missed the penalty at the time, but we're going to suspend the guy for the next game against Calgary. you know. And if I sound paranoid, I am a little bit, and I'll admit to that. But this was bad, man. This was bad. This was like, I've seen dozens of four-minute high-sticking penalties this year. This was probably worse than any of them. Nurse had a smushed in lip and he had blood on his lip, but he wasn't really gushing blood. So because he's got thick skin, it was only 2 minutes. So they got 2 minutes each, 5 minutes each for the fight. And then they gave Nurse 10 minutes for berating the linesman. And what they should have been given Nurse was a damn apology. So I was livid. Like they took basically Oilers' top defenseman and sat him out for the whole third period while clubbing him in the face and punching him a bunch of times. It was a bad sequence, man. It really wasn't fair.
Okay, Bruce, I got some good news for you.
Good.
15-game winning streak for the Bakersfield Condors. Yamamoto and Cooper Marody scored tonight. Shane Starrett, one goal against. Stuart Skinner, one goal against.
SSSS are the goalies right now. In OT, hey, look at that.
Yeah, and it was Marody from Benson, Tyler Benson, and William Laugesen.
Oh, you're going to like that. Three young guys.
Oh, yeah.
Combining on the game winner in overtime.
I wonder how many of those guys will be on the Oilers next year. Do you think we might get as many as like three or four or five of them?
Possibly. They got to do something.
This is the funny thing. You look at the list of free agents. First of all, the Oilers have no money for free agents. Second of all, you just get ripped off paying for free agents anyway. Yep. So you have a choice. You can try to pry. You might get lucky. And if you're a smart GM, you'll figure out, well, who are the really good, you know, who are one or two good 24, 25-year-old players that are not, who've been undervalued in someone else's system and bring that guy in. But other than that, you're really reliant on who your system's producing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where, if there's help coming, this is where it's coming from. So it's going to be Tyler Benson and Cooper Marody and William Laugesen and Caleb Jones and Shane Starrett. That's where it's coming from. So we better hope that these guys are up to it. Maybe Cutter Yamamoto. Nice to see them win.
Here's a sad fact for you. I was looking the other day trying to figure out why the Oilers were so tapped out on salary cap. And, of course, there's a lot of reasons and a lot of poor contract bets in there. But I was comparing to Tampa Bay, who had a lot of poor a lot of high contracts, contributing players, but guys getting paid, you know, like $5 million for anyway. Difference: Tampa Bay has 5 players on entry level contracts. Edmonton has 1, and that 1 is about to be on his way out to Bakersfield, because that's, of course, that's the Puljujärvi.
So they got no
cheap. They got no cheap young players on their team.
Well, maybe this is now. Is this the fact that there's no one from Bakersfield who can play on that team? Like, I thought Cooper Marody looked good when he was in Edmonton. I know every guy, as he gets, doesn't skate well enough, but he's smart with the puck. That goes a long way. I'm not so sure that he can't play in the NHL right now. Is this a more of a willingness in Tampa Bay even to give young people a chance? I mean, Jesse Puljujärvi's going to the AHL. Yep. Who are they giving the chances to? Sam Gagner and Alex Chiasson. Mm-hmm. I mean, so part of this, I think, is coaching philosophy. Like, we can't – it's the Hitch idea and the McClellan idea previously. Like, we just got to play it tight. You know, we can't afford to make one mistake, so we can't go with young guys. I don't know. I've wanted to see a rookie line, best players of the AHL – farm team up in Edmonton for a month or two now. And I just can't imagine it would be any worse than sending Kyle Brodziak out onto the ice to send Cooper Marody. I just can't, because it won't be. So now you can make it argument, well, you got to have the overripe thing going on. Well, you know, Marody is, he's not 19 or 20. He's 22 now. He's the same age as Connor McDavid. And, you know, he played 3 years of college hockey. He's been there half a year. Pittsburgh won a cup. They brought a couple of guys up who the first time they won the cup with Johnson as the coach. I think those Sherry and the other guy played half a year in the AHL. And you don't have to be in the AHL forever. Most guys who make it in the NHL are either in the AHL for a year or not in the AHL at all. So I don't want to go against the overripe thing too much. Like, I do think it is valuable to have people in the AHL, but I want to see a coach come in who's going to give these AHL players a chance. It isn't going to be thinking, well, Sam Gagner, Alex Chiasson are the answer, and that's who we're going to go with. So that's what I'm hoping. And there's some pretty good results from those AHL players, so we can look forward to that. Now, I can see maybe they don't want, you know, promised Benson he's going to stay down there and they don't want to break up that team. So there's that. But I want to see some of these players in Edmonton. And I wouldn't mind seeing them sooner than later. You?
Well, I don't think we will until after the deadline. And I think it's probably at this point a strong case can be made just to leave him in Bakersfield and play out this season on a good team, winning environment, positive atmosphere, rather than bringing him up to this poison well that is Edmonton Oilers right now, suffering through another season with exasperated, frustrated, intemperate fans ripping the organization and the players left and right. And, you know,
we will see Becker, of course. Like, he'll be here next week. So there's one guy.
Yes. But yeah, well, he's not exactly a kid. He's been around the block a few times.
This is going to be a huge thing, of course, how he does. Like, if he's back, if he's looking like he can play at a decent level, then that will be huge for the Oilers in and of itself. Like, if he's – so, and we've talked about this before, so that's fingers crossed there. I didn't see him play tonight, so. Yeah. You know, maybe we won't see Lagesson or Caleb Jones again this year. I'd sure like to see him. I'd like to see that as the third pairing for the final month of the season. Don't see – you can send him back down to the Bakersfield for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see, what happens. But that's – I mean, one play, and Keith Gretzky's direction seems to be to focus on getting the young guys ice time in the lower league and slow playing him a little bit. And who's to argue at this point? I mean, it's not going well here. It is going well there. So it's a good experience for those fellows down there at the moment, I would have to think.
It must be, they must be on cloud nine now, honestly. They're winning a lot of close games by one goal, including 2 1-goal games this weekend. So good for them. And it's fantastic to see. And hopefully they can have an extensive playoff run. That's what I'm looking forward to. When I think of hockey this year, I'm looking. That's what I'm looking. I'm not looking. I don't care about the Stanley Cup playoffs anymore. I don't give a hoot. Won't be watching them, but I will be watching the Bakersfield Condors in the AHL in the playoffs.
I've watched the playoffs every year since 1963, give or take 2005. That the league forgot to put them on. Not that I'm bitter about that or anything still. Otherwise, it's an annual tradition for me, whatever teams are in the playoffs. And I just have to learn as an Oilers fan. It's like, you know, baseball. You have your team, and then you have your American League team. Well, in hockey, you have the Oilers, and then you have your playoff team, because there's never the twain shall meet, apparently.
I have no playoff team. I have the Oilers, and that means no playoff team. And I have the Bakersfield Condors. I mean, I've watched them through the playoffs. Their farm team, they went on a good run under Todd Nelson about three or 4 years ago. That was fun.
Yeah.
And of course, none of those players really got a chance in the NHL. McCollin took over, and that wasn't going to happen. All right. You know, I just remember Bruce reading Bill James, and I think it was Bill James, and he was writing about, I can't remember which manager he was writing about in the 70s, like Whitey Herzog or Leo DeRocher. I can't remember. It was from the 60s. It was someone, no, it wasn't Earl Weaver, but it was someone who went to a couple different cities, and what he did each time was give young players a chance. And I know there's a lot of, you know, people take a jaundiced look at that in Edmonton because but this isn't looking at giving 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds a chance. Mm-hmm. What he would do would be, you know, they'd be in the system, and he'd say, okay, you're 22. You are going to get a chance here to play. And he'd go with three or four of them. And he won that way, this manager. And that's stuck in my head, that idea that that can work. You know, and there's a hesitancy sometimes to give younger players a chance from the farm system. So anyway, that's what I'm hoping to see. My number, by the way, is 10-10, which was, or 11-11. The scoring chances in this game were even tonight. So this plays into what you're saying, that it was a fairly even contest between both teams. Either team could have easily won that game. The Oilers, I haven't run the data lately, but I think they've been far more outchanced under Hitchcock than they were under McClellan. So, but this
is an outshot for sure.
This is a game that they could have won with Hitchcock, and just didn't get the bounces. Did you give a number yet? What's your number?
On this road trip, the Oilers outshot the other guys 116-85, I think. So basically cool. 10 shots of the game margin plus for shots. Now, mind you, shots and scoring chances, as you know, are two very different things, but they were at least getting pucks on net and close to 40 in all three games. So they were bringing it and trying to push it, but that, I mean, four goals on the trip. So that's
not a lot to cheer about. So let's leave it.
I've got a number of 15 for the Bakersfield winning streak, but also in the Oilers' last seven games, they scored 15 goals, and Leon Draisaitl has 8 of them, and the entire rest of the team has 7. So the pop gun offense is really biting them now. The big guy is scoring great, and otherwise, there's just not enough secondary scoring. Nothing.
Marcel Dion and Dave Taylor.
Yeah, and Charlie Simmer.
That's what it's starting to feel like. Well, we don't have a trip. We don't have the third guy yet on the. But so it's starting to feel like it's the LA Kings of the 70s here in Edmonton with these Oilers.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk at all about the two trades?
The Talbot one?
Yeah.
I don't have much to say.
And the Daniel one.
Yeah, I don't have much to say. I mean, I have very little to say about either, honestly.
You cleared some cap space with
the, yeah. Good. Yeah, and good.
The other one was just a trade of negative assets. And my definition of a negative asset, by definition, if the guy clears waivers and none of the other teams touch him, that means his contract is worth less than zero, by my math. And so both Gagne and Spooner were among the very most expensive players in the AHL, basically identical one more year at $3 million. And so it's just a matter of, you're not going to get a superstar, and you're not going to trade Spooner for a draft pick if he's not going to go on waivers. So some people are saying, well, they should have traded him for a pick rather than getting another bad contract. Well, it's the only way you're going to trade him. So did you get a guy that's better than the guy you let go? Well, they got a right-hand shot. On the power play, Gagne is actually kind of a power play specialist, and the Oilers are desperate for right-hand shots on the power play, and they're certainly not desperate for Spooner's left-hand shot on the power play, which is yes. one of the reasons I wondered about that trade in the first place, Strome, a righty for Spooner.
Having never used Jesse Puljujärvi there on that spot all these years, they bring in another, like, you know, they had to use Mark Letestu all of last year. Mm-hmm. Now they got to use Sam Gagne and Chase. I don't mind Sam Gagne. Like, he is a good little power play guy, so maybe he can help them win a few games right now and get it. Instead of drafting third, we can draft 10th, something like that. I actually like the Talbot trade a lot. They got a goalie with a higher save percentage in return for Cam Talbot.
Better stats, eh?
Better stats, younger goalie,
More bigger.
More bigger, making less money. What's not to like about that trade? So Talbot, come on.
I don't mind the trade at all.
Talbot had been mediocre and to weak to mediocre. How many good games did Cam Talbot have this year? Like 5? So I think that's about right. And so good luck to Cam Talbot. I hope he turns his game around. He really did a lot. As an Oiler, you know, his family did some good charity work in the city.
Yep.
It's all really good stuff. But the bottom line in the NHL is performance. And, man, for 2 years, it was not there. Like, that whole thing, those early goals in games last year and then somewhat this year, it was just such a killer. So maybe he can turn his game around. Like, you know, some people say it's because the Oilers' defense is so erratic that goalies start to lose confidence and there's maybe something to that. So hopefully Cam Talbot will, behind the Philadelphia defense, have some more luck.
Yeah, well, he's something of a mentor, personal mentor for Carter Hart. So that had a big part to play. So they clearly targeted Philadelphia there, and Philly had some cap room, so they made the move. And apparently Philly wanted to unload one of their more expensive goalies on Edmonton, Brian Elliott, and Keith Gretzky held out for the cheaper guy, the younger, cheaper guy. And at this point, where Edmonton is, 1 point out of last place, it makes sense that...
Now some of the mainstream reporters are pushing Gretzky to get the GM job. I mean, apparently he doesn't want it. I just read that too. Like, he's not interested in it, which is interesting. I think he's probably wise, maybe not even to put his name in the running. I just don't think that would be a good idea to hire him. Like, I don't know. He does have some qualifications, but I just think they need to hire a hockey president, someone who knows what they're doing, and let that person conduct a wide search for a hockey president first, hire that person, then a wide search for a GM, hire that person, and then a wide search for a coach, hire that person. And in that order, that's what I'd like to see. Right. So, Gretzky, once they hire a good hockey president, if that Gretzky applies and gets it, so be it. But I do want to see not just two or three names that they're pursuing madly and without doing the proper evaluation. Let's leave it there, Bruce.
Yeah, okay. Let's do that, David. See you on Tuesday night.
Tuesday night it is.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.